Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Eduardo M. Fryer, and welcome to Keeping It Reals, the only live show on internet radio where the host actually enjoys Megaforce and truly believes that the good guys can still win, even in the 80s. Yes, well, you know what? The reasoning behind that wonderful quote is, well, we're going to talk about movies today. Well, we always talk about movies. Movies is like something we just keep jawing about all the time. And, well, you know what? We are actually, though, going to be talking about, well, yeah, movies that aren't all that great. Because, you know what? Unfortunately, some films are made and, yeah, they're just, they're no good. They're just bad.
Here
you go. Here's the first for our little roundtable discussion of this tonight. My wonderful, darling, so wonderful wife, Patricia Fryer. How you doing, Patricia? You all right?
Good.
You doing okay?
Yeah, I'm good. How are you? I'm good. How are
okay.
you?
Okay, that's good. That's good. And you know what, Trish, okay, fortunately, it's good that you're first and Iggy isn't, because I know you'll be on your best behavior, because you know what, we have a very special guest. Yes, we have an expert on cinema, the host of the Greatest Movie Ever podcast, Mr. Paul Chapman. Paul, hey, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Hey, Eddie. Thanks for having me. You're not going to make me quote Firefly, are you?
Not if you don't want to.
I aim to misbehave.
Okay, well, you know what? You're in the I actually forgot to mention this podcast. We got the content warning up, so you know what, you can misbehave here even more than you do at your usual broadcasting setup. So you know what, don't worry about it. Drop the F bombs. You know what, you can rage all you want. I still remember when you covered Godzilla Final Wars on GME and you lost it. Have you recovered from that? Because I got worried about you when I heard that podcast.
I don't even remember what I said on Godzilla Final Wars, honestly. It's been a long time since then. And
yeah,
since then, I've had other Godzilla films to be mad about and then pleased with, in the case of the Year of the Adverse version. And I enjoy Shin Godzilla.
That's good. I don't remember exactly what you said either. I just remember at one point you were just, you just completely lost it. You were just like, you couldn't take it anymore. I mean, you were worse than than that woman in the movie Airplane, who just starts like freaking out, and then there's like a long line of people trying to tell her, "You have to calm down. You have to get a hold of yourself." I mean, that almost sounded like you, man. Like I said, I started to get worried.
I picked the wrong day to stop sniffing glue.
Yeah, but yeah, thank you for coming on, because I mean, I have to admit, you have been one of my role models in doing this. You know, just in being able to cover a huge gamut and being able to do it with just your particular style and just, you know, and also just trying not to take things too seriously. Cause I mean, seriously, when you're dealing with pop culture, especially when you have things like Howard the Duck existing, how do you take yourself? How do you take it seriously? I mean, at least not without.
The better question is like, who thought that movie with that particular script was worthy of the amount of money and sweat equity they poured into it.
yeah. And you know, we actually, here's the thing. Trish and I went to a friend's house where we did kind of a cheesy movie night. And we watched Howard the Duck along with somebody who was an extra in that movie. Trish, you remember that one?
Oh yeah. I remember that.
Yeah. He was like, wasn't he like a little kid like in the background. What was it?
Yeah, he was
it
in
was
the background,
like,
with his dad.
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly where, but they just happened to come across them filming, and they just stuck them in there.
Yeah, and if I remember correctly, it was the scene with Howard and Tim Robbins' character on that like flying contraption, like when they were just tearing around. You know, you just have them tearing through a city street, and then it's like, oh, look, there's a kid and his dad. Like, there's your 15 minutes. Enjoy. It's like, but my 15 minutes is Howard the Duck. Sucks to be you. As our special guest here, Paul, let me just lay down what this episode is. See, we were talking, Iggy, who's my fellow producer on this, and she's supposed to be here hopefully soon. We were talking, and she really wanted an episode because, see, we review movies, and, you know, we talk a lot about movies. You know, we've reviewed the Marvel stuff. We've reviewed DC stuff. And, you know, she wanted to do a movie where we just talk about bad movies, stuff that was just badly done. And as I'm making this episode, I thought, you know what? I think we need to do two categories that we really need to focus on. There's just genuinely bad, like, you know, to quote Billy, my brother-in-law, one of his favorite podcasts is called How Did This Get Made? You know, it's like, yeah, how did this movie get made? And then the other one would be, you know, movies that, okay, they're bad, but there's just something about them that keep watching them. You know, you just can't look away. You know, it's kind of like that meal that you have that you know it's unhealthy for you. You know you shouldn't be eating this, but God damn it, there's just something about this greasy pile that you can't resist. It's like an Outback Bloomin' Onion.
Sometimes you have to eat 50 chicken nuggets.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's like I'm you know, Trish and I went on Weight Watchers, and yeah, we use the app. Like, you look at how much the Bloomin' Onion is. It's like, how am I not dead? You know, there's been a lot of that, but you know what? I think, you know what? Let's, I don't know.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, no, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say that I think simply trying to break it down into two categories might be a little bit too binary, because I feel like there's more nuance when it comes to bad movies and what makes a movie bad, because there isn't really a lot of comparison between, say, for example, a big budget Hollywood movie that has like actual star power in it, and then through the editing process, through rewrites, through producer meddling, for example, it turns into some sort of flaming catastrophe. For example, the 47 Ronin film that was starring Keanu Reeves. Like, that's a bad movie. But it's a bad movie that is fascinating in the sense that it's like this Frankenstein's monster, and you can see every stitch where someone meddled to make that film into what it ultimately was in the final cut that was released in theaters and on home video. And then there are other bad movies that are like passion projects that are made by people that have more aspiration than talent. You know, you're films that end up on things like Red Letter Media's Best of the Worst and Mystery Science Theater 3000, you know, your Final Sacrifices, your Zots, or what is that? Zats, it was also called The Blood Waters of Dr. Z, if I remember correctly.
Oh, yeah, the one that kind of had that, yeah, you know, I think that was the one with the, that was the one that had that mad scientist who turns himself into like a ripoff of
a fish monster,
Creature from the Black Lagoon. Yeah.
Yeah, when he's in the fish costume and stuff. Yeah, but I mean, like, that's a different. There's really no fair comparison between something like Zatz or The Blood Waters of Dr. Z and something like 47 Ronin, or something that you watch it and it's something that gets like a legitimate theatrical release here in the U.S., but it's just uninspired or, you know, lazy writing or something like that, and. So, I mean, like, there's good films, there's bad films, there's mediocre films, there are films
right.
that are fascinating in their terribleness. Like, I've been watching a lot of video essays on YouTube recently from people like Foldable Human and Lindsay Ellis, where they kind of deconstruct the badness of the more mainstream pop culture media, like Foldable Humans, Folding Ideas, Foldable Humans, I think the name of the YouTube channel, but they go into, like, he's doing like a big deconstruction of the 50 Shades of Grey movie.
I will admit here that Trish and I are fans of 50 Shades.
But would you say that they're good films?
No, they're just pleasures, I guess. They're not particularly good in a sense. There's something about them that's, there's enjoyment with them, but it's totally guilty pleasures. It's, I think of it as long lines of, I don't watch like the Real Housewives or whatever, but I call those guilty pleasures, and this, I will take these movies over those shows any day.
and I promise I won't get mad, Trish, but, would you say part of the appeal is, the guy who plays Christian Grey?
No, not really.
Like not even when he's shirtless and smoldering. Like I said,
okay.
I'm not going to get jealous. Okay, I'm not going to get jealous. I'm not going to get mad. If that's it, I mean, just, lay it on the table.
No. It's really not.
The
actor.
Well, then even something like 50 Shades of Grey or the Twilight movies, those films can only ever be, like, they're sort of a baseline. They come from sort of bad source material. Bad literature. It's possible to make a good movie out of a bad book, but you got to work really, really hard to do it.
Really? What would you say is an example of that, Paul?
Apparently, and I haven't seen this, but people are saying that the Ready Player One movie, for example, is much better than the book because it sort of excises all of the worst extravagances of Ernest Cline, some of his most odious habits as a writer. Yeah. The transphobia and like the racism and all that kind of stuff that was just sort of caked into this novel that was written in 2007 compared to the crowd pleasing but relatively safe sentimentality of a Steven Spielberg film.
Well, see, because Trish and I saw Ready Player One twice. We've never read the book. And I hear some people. Yeah, no, because I hear some people being like, they do the classic argument of, well, the book is just so much better than the movie.
Wrong.
Well, I know that there's more. I know that there's more references to stuff, but that it's a little less. It might be a little bit more. Cerebral, or just a little bit less about obvious movie and TV and video game references. That it's kind of a little more in depth type of stuff. Like that's what
the
I
book
heard. I mean,
is the literary equivalent of being accosted by a total stranger at a science fiction or anime convention, and they just start talking at you about all of their favorite things without pausing for breath.
I see. Okay.
That's kind of the experience.
Interesting. Okay. But you know what? It's interesting that you mentioned Paul. That the layers that you're talking about, because I do know that while we were prepping to do this show, I did ask people to try and give lists of films, and Trish actually came up with her own list. Trish, what did you call it?
Well, which one? The
because like I know you did movies that you thought were bad. And then movies that you thought are so bad, they're good. And then you had a third one.
Oh, the third one was critically acclaimed movies that are awful.
There's plenty of those.
Ones that critics just loved and that just suck, really.
Yeah. Well, no, that one, I mean, the minute that I saw that, the minute that we were talking about that, I was like, you know what? This is an episode in and of itself. Because, I mean, I saw a few films in there that I'm like, I actually like this movie. And then there were a couple in there that I'm like, yep. Yeah, I really do not like this movie. I really don't. I immediately thought, you know what? We're going to table this right now. We're going to table it. And that's going to be the sequel to this episode. Okay, it's going to be, yeah. In fact, I don't even know. I know that there is one episode that's going to be coming up, I think, in July. I need to check the list. But basically, it's going to be all about saying fuck you to James Cameron. Because, you know, when he started off on his whole superhero fatigue thing, and he's like, nobody's doing any original ideas. And I'm like, bro, you're the one doing how many Avatar sequels? And you're working on another Terminator movie? Like, dude,
yeah, there's something to be said for the staggering hypocrisy of that. But I think he was right in some sense in terms of superhero fatigue. Okay. Superhero movies dominate our pop culture in a way that is kind of unprecedented.
Yeah, no, that is that. I will give that. But yeah, that.
But I don't think that was necessarily the point he was trying to make.
Yeah, well, I think
most
butthurt.
Of his best ideas were actually stolen from his various ex-wives.
Yeah, well, not to mention the fact that he's a little butthurt that everybody's like, Wonder Woman is the greatest female heroine, and he's, you know, pointing to like the giant size picture he has of Linda Hamilton and Sarah Connor, going, guys, come on. What? Why are you throwing me out on the street?
Well, that's kind of sour grapes. They're not really comparable. I mean, one's a comic book character with, you know, a history that goes back decades. And then, I mean, yeah, Terminator was, what, 81, the first one?
No,
so that's been around
for
a long time.
No, it was like 82, 84.
Yeah.
It was like
early
82, 84. Yeah, early to mid. I know that T2 was... T2 was 92.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But those are the only Terminator movies that Linda Hamilton is in as Sarah Connor. And, I mean, Sarah Connor is an iconic action heroine, but she's no Wonder Woman. Not in terms of cultural cachet or anything like that.
Indeed. But getting on to the main point. So, you know what? And actually, the fact that you're here is good because I do want to ask you this. A movie that came up a lot as we're preparing for this. In fact, I think it was in your list, Trish. I think it was in your So Bad It's Good list. We did mention the Sharknado films, and see the thing that comes out of those. I'm also thinking of Lavalantula, which is another one of those sci-fi channel, you know, films that kind of is that. It's obvious, you know, from the way that they were made that these films are being done bad on purpose, that they're trying to be cheesy on purpose. And so, I mean,
I think it's
talking...
worse than that, honestly, Eddie. I think that it's not that they're done bad on purpose. It's that the people that make them simply do not care. And I think that that's worse. I think it's worse for someone to pour their heart and their soul and their passion into something and for it to be terrible because their aspirations outstrip their talents. But in the case of The Asylum in particular, the stuff that I've read about the behind the scenes working of how those films get made and written and produced and everything like that, I think that they're just deeply, deeply cynical people that do not care about film as a form of art or entertainment. And there's just something so grossly nihilistic about those films that I don't give them the time of day.
Interesting.
There's an article I read that was about a person who worked for the Asylum, actually. And what he went into the job from, and it's been a while since I've read this, but he went into the job fresh out of film school. And he's like, well, I can work for the Asylum and I can, I can write films and they'll be goofy and funny and tongue in cheek. And because clearly these films are made with the ascension of like, we're going to make a bad movie on purpose. And then he got into the actual grind of working for that company and found out, no, that was not the case. Every film, as awful as they ultimately end up being, goes through the same hellish system of like notes and review process and the supervisor telling you, well, why can't we have a cat instead of a dog and everything like that. And the results are still what you see. So yeah, again, I think that there's no actual tongue in cheek nature to those films. I think there's just a lot of deeply cynical marketing. And, not my cup of tea as a result.
Okay. Interesting. So, I mean, Trish, how many of those have we seen together?
Five, I think, right? Is that what you're up to?
Okay. I don't think I saw the first one with you. I think we saw the riff tracks of one. I know we saw the one that ended on a cliffhanger, and it's like, go vote to see if Tara Reid lives or dies. And I wanted her so dead, and I didn't get what I want, and I'm still mad. And then I know there was the one that the most recent one that ended with setting up the time travel one, which is coming out. I think we're like at six. But I think you and I have seen three or four of those. Like, that's what, yeah. The other thing.
I enjoy them, in a way. Yeah. I mean, they are terrible. Yeah. They have, you know, some of them are better than others, but they just seem, you know, the more they go on, the worse they get. You know, but what's crazy is that all the celebrities that come out of the woodwork that, you know, want to be in it.
Yeah.
Seems the more they go, the more celebrities they get.
Now, I mean, Trish, why do you think that is?
Because there's a lot of stupid people out there that like to watch the movies. I mean, despite how bad they are, they still get watched a lot.
So it's exposure? So you think it's an exposure thing?
Exposure, yeah.
Okay.
People want to be a part of the phenomenon.
Okay. Paul, what do you think? I mean, is it just an exposure and a paycheck?
Well, in terms of the actors' motivations, yeah, I would say that. I just think that those films are deeply, deeply cynical in terms of their creation and their production. So. And then marketing. I mean, they can put out an inferior product and people will pay attention to them and tweet along on social media and they'll make back their money enough that they can keep doing it. That's been the Asylum's business model for, you know, like over a decade at this point.
Yeah.
Out straight to video stuff that is deliberately meant to be confused for a more popular mainstream movie at the Red Box, you know, at the video store.
Are they the ones that brought out, like, for example, when Bay did the Transformers thing?
They're the ones who did the transmogrifiers
or whatever the fuck they call them.
Transmorphers. They're the ones, like, when 10,000 BC was in the theater, I think they did one that was 100,000 BC or something like that. Yeah, when the Sherlock Holmes movies that had Robert Downey Jr. in there, they had their knockoff version of it. Yeah, they're the equivalent of, like, those weird cartoons that you'll find, like, for $3 at the grocery store that are, like, it's not the Jungle Book, it's not the Disney Jungle Book, but it is a Jungle Book.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't like The Asylum, and I think that they're deeply cynical, and I think that they tend to dominate a lot of conversations about bad films because they're very good at marketing and visibility for that kind of thing. But that's, in my opinion, all that they've got, and that doesn't have the heart and soul of a bad movie in the same way that something like Plan 9 from Outer Space or Troll 2, which are, you know, classic examples. But I think there are reasons people are attracted to those films.
It's good that you brought that up, because that is one of the another movie that I did want to discuss in this. That's one of the movies that came up immediately when this episode was, you know, this episode that we're in here right now was being crafted. I was like, Troll 2 has to be a centerpiece of this. So you would say that, like, when you talk about, you know, the hallmark of a bad movie, I mean, would you say that's one of those where it's like people put a lot of effort into it and it just came out wanting?
Yes. Like, if you look at the interviews with the director, is that Enzo Castellari who did that one? Let me look at my DVD. Blu-ray.
Do we have Enzo in the collection? Yeah. Can somebody then? I don't know. Either one of you, can you grab it? Because I'm in the home office. I can't run downstairs and get it.
No, it's Claudio Fugace. That's who it was, I think.
Okay. Very Italian name.
Yeah. He was doing it under a pseudonym, too, if I remember correctly. But I'm pretty sure it was Claudio Fugace, and I'm pretty sure he's also the guy who brought us the wonderful only horror movie starring Alice Cooper in a leading role, Monster Dog.
Jeez. You know, I don't think I've ever seen... That name
that
sounds familiar?
That movie is a treat.
Oh, jeez.
You want to see a bad movie, my goodness.
Oh, jeez.
It's such a bad movie, but it's a bad werewolf movie starring Alice Cooper.
Oh, no. No, wait, did you cover that one? Or no?
Yeah, long time ago. Long time
wait,
ago.
Did you cover...
Claudio Fugace, he's my boy.
Yeah, I gotta go back, man. But yeah, Troll 2. And that's actually
if you see the documentary, the worst movie ever made documentary, where they kind of recreate the process that went into making that movie, Claudio Fugace is like a serious guy, and he like considers himself a serious filmmaker. I think a lot of his output when he was making films in Italy there's some grindhouse exploitation type stuff, but I think there were efforts to be like a serious dramatic artist, and like if you talk to him about Troll 2 and imply that the movie is bad or goofy or anything like that, he'll be offended by that. Like he takes it personally because he thinks it's a good movie and that it's
a
real work of art.
Yeah,
and
I
also
saw that
I think that one of the reasons why like people keep coming back to Troll 2 is because as befuddling as many scenes in that movie are, you know, they're eating him, and then they're going to eat me. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
You know, Goblin or Nilbog, it's Goblin spelled backwards. You know, like there's certain moments of just pure nonsense that you can't fathom why they were committed to film the way that they were.
Not just a regular bologna sandwich, it had to be a double-decker.
The scene where the girl's doing, like, the upside-down eyeglasses when she's dancing in the mirror, because that's what Claudio Fugace thinks that teenage girls would do in the early 90s. You know, like, I mean, and there are also things in that movie that are legitimately horrifying if you think about them, like being turned into a plant and then devoured by goblins. I mean, that's it's pretty creepy and unsettling. I mean, you know. So I think that's an example of a movie that has a well-earned reputation for being a movie that's so bad that it's good.
Okay. What about, all right, I'm going to pull another chestnut out here, and this also comes, Trish, you were awesome with your lists, because there's some great nuggets in here. Another one I want to pull out, and honestly, I don't know. Every time I think about this movie, I die a little inside. Birdemic.
I don't know about Birdemic.
I don't know. You know, I actually had to look this up because I swore for the life of me that I thought this was one of those times where you had somebody that was trying to make a bad movie on purpose. And
well, then
when
then
I
you got
when
a
I
budget for the second
yeah,
one,
yeah,
everyone
and
realized,
I
oh. Oh no!
because it's like it's like Trish and her brother actually like held me hostage and made me watch this, and I'm just like.
But at least it made you watch the Riff Trax version. At least it was the Riff Trax version.
That's true. that is okay. That is true. So I didn't have to watch it unfiltered. So at least the guys from Riff Trax were there. But I just. Just the fact I had to look this up to figure out if whether or not this guy was trying to be bad on purpose. I don't know how to process this film. I'm just like, did you even try? Or did you just? I mean, it's like, I don't know. I just picture the ghost of Ed Wood going. Dude, man, I wasn't this bad. Wow, and I had coked out Bela Lugosi with me, and not even I didn't even produce this. What the fuck, man? I mean, I don't know. I just don't know what to think of it. I mean, what about you, Paul?
It was like badly written fan fiction, you know, that the writer decided that they wanted to, you know, make into a movie, as they just thought it was so good.
Yeah, I actually haven't seen Birdemic in its entirety, so I can't really
weigh in
with like a
nuanced
opinion on that. I've just heard that it's one of those films that it has a reputation for being a bad movie that people put on to show to other people, but I also hear it's just punishingly not fun to watch.
It doesn't even have the quality of student film. You know, you can't even like sneak this into a college like film class. And then,
I've seen the scenes of the special effects of the bird attacks, and it looks like, you know, when you go to Busch Gardens and you'd spend like $25 and you do that green screen thing where they throw the stuffed lion at you, and it looked like that.
Yep. Yep. Well, I think we're even being insulting to Busch Gardens at this point. But it's just, and then it's like, how far did the movie go, Trish, before we had the actual bird attack? Like over a half hour, wasn't it?
It was almost an hour.
I think I read some
come out of nowhere. It's just like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah, well it's like,
and there was absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I think I read somewhere that like at least like 45 to 47 minutes, and it's like, why couldn't you have done it sooner? Like, why didn't somebody tell you, this is how you edit a film. This needs to be a little sooner. Okay, like, sit. Here, we're going to go to this machine. We're going to try and tighten this scene up, okay? Just sit down. We're going
to
work on
this.
Not
to mention that anybody in that movie has to drive anywhere, they have to show the entire driving journey. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's how film works.
But you know what? This is one that I actually used to advertise this episode. And this one for me, I think of it as a bad movie, and honestly, it hurts. And I had brought it up at the beginning of the episode. Howard the Duck. I don't know. Like there's some cases, you know, you do bring up a good point, Paul. There are some cases that I just kind of want to like take somebody aside, and I just want to be like, okay, you tried. This didn't work. Okay, this didn't work. It's okay. It's all right. You know. And then there are others that I'm like, what the fuck is the matter with you? How did you screw this up so badly? And Howard the Duck is one of those examples. I'm just like,
that's a movie that is remarkably bad, but it had a very large amount of talent behind it. It's got Leah Thompson, it's got Tim Robbins, it's got Jeffrey Jones is a really good actor, even if he is a convicted sex offender. I can't separate the one from the other, I suppose. But
I don't know.
George Lucas was producing it. They were pushing that movie pretty hard when it came out in the theaters back in the day, and they had plans for it to be competing with some other stuff. And it's a hard movie to watch because there's like parts of it that are like well done. Like I think like the musical numbers are actually pretty catchy. And
Leah Thompson and her band.
The special effects that went into Howard, although they don't really hold up very well, you know, there were some interesting things that they were doing there. Like the stop motion animation of the alien creature that comes out of Jeffrey Jones later, I think.
Oh yeah, the Overlord.
I don't remember.
The Dark Overlord of the Universe.
Yeah. But the person who did the stop motion animation for that was a real, A class,
person. I keep wanting to say that it was Phil Tippett, but I'm not sure if that was the case.
I want to say Tippett too. I want to say it was Tippett too.
Let's see. Here's the special effects section on Wikipedia. I'm just looking at it. Yeah. Yep. Stop motion effects during climax were designed by Phil Tippett.
Jurassic Park.
Damn it, Phil. This isn't amateur hour. There were raptors in the kitchen, in the goddamn kitchen.
I don't know.
Yeah. There's not inconsiderable amount of money and talent and time that went into making that film, and it ended up being a flaming disaster. And I mean, like, a lot of people love to hate on the Super Mario Brothers film with Bob Hoskins and John Leguizamo, and yes, that movie is a disaster
even Bob Hoskins
in many
himself.
Respects.
Yep. Bob Hoskins himself was like, why did I do this?
But as much as, like, as bad as that movie is, I really have a lot of time for it because it is sort of fascinating in terms of its production design and all the work they put into the costumes and the sets.
Oh, yeah.
And you wouldn't look at that movie and say, oh, yeah, I played Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah.
That's what I'm seeing here. But I kind of respect it for being willing to deviate from whatever people were expecting from that film, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, to the point where there was a comic book adaptation that was based on, like, an unproduced sequel script to that film that was actually pretty interesting. It was making the rounds on the internet a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I think I tried checking out a link to that, and for some reason I couldn't, like, I got to a page and I couldn't work, I couldn't get it to work where I could start from the beginning and then move up. So I was just like, okay, I can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
But I did see that they had a sequel going in comic form. I'm like, okay, that is interesting. Cause I'd love, I'd love to see what it is they had in mind, to follow
cool.
up. Yeah.
So that movie's a lot of people's favorite punching bag though.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I honestly, it's like, okay, yeah, it's not the best thing. But I would say that one I think would probably be under a so bad it's good. I think I would put that under that category. Cause I mean, it's not, it actually, there is something there that, you know, makes it watchable, you know, and at least like, willing to kind of dive in.
And reading about, like, everything that went wrong in the process of creating that movie is really fascinating, too.
Yeah.
There have been some really good behind-the-scenes stuff about that recently.
Oh, yeah. And just the fact that Bob Hoskins was all... I feel like when he was alive, if you would have walked up to him and been like, Mario, he would have been like, get the fuck over here. What are you talking about? You know, like, his British act would have come off and he would have, like, tried to beat you on the street. I don't know, or at least giving you like a thrashing and tried to mention like movies that he did that, you know, were considered much better.
Acting's gotta act.
Yeah, that's true. But, another one, if we're talking like bad movies and like the behind the scenes stuff, you know, especially like what went wrong. I know one of the ones you covered like in the beginning of the podcast, was Street Fighter. The one with Van Damme and Raul Julia and Kylie Minogue and Ming-Na.
Yeah, I mean, I got a lot of time for that movie as well.
Yeah, but, you know, it's interesting because, I mean, that one I put under a bad movie. Don't put it under a bad, it's good, but it's one of those things. I think I put it under kind of car wreck territory because it's like I wouldn't have it in my collection, but if it was on TV and there was nothing on, I would still maybe catch like some of it. The thing that gets me though is I've read like a lot of background stuff like on IMDb and other places, and just how, like, for example, did you hear about what happened, like how they wanted to shoot the film, like in terms of like the martial arts battles and then also M. Bison?
No, I can't say I have heard of that.
Yeah, because what I heard was that the plan originally was they were going to bring in Raul Julia, they were going to do his stuff first, and use that time so that all the martial artists that were involved were going to be able to choreograph the fights and, you know, and like do all that stuff so then they could do that later. But then Raul Julia shows up and he's sick as a dog. Mm-hmm. Like, he was sick while making this film. You know, when he came in, he looked like, you know, apparently he looked like shit. You know, he was really sick. So, you know, the powers that be, you know, the director and, you know, the people behind this film were like, okay, we cannot do his stuff. They sent him to recoup, you know, they sent him and his family to like a resort or something to recuperate, to gather strength. So they were like, shit, okay, we got to reverse things. So you have some of those fight scenes were choreographed like right before shooting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were done, you know, they weren't really as polished out because it's like, oh crap, we can't take too much time.
Well, and also you're not talking about like Japan's Alpha Stunts or any of the teams from like Hong Kong that have a long-standing history of working together and being able to choreograph a scene immediately before filming it because they just don't have the time or budget to go to waste, you know, a lot of set time on stuff like that. And so like have you ever seen the behind the scenes stuff where they were choreographing for the Matrix? The first Matrix film with Wu-Tang and his team. What was so really cool about that was basically they had some behind the scenes set stuff with Lawrence Fishburne and Keanu Reeves and Yuen Woo-ping. And Yuen Woo-ping went through like the Morpheus Neo fight in the dojo. And it was just, he's like called one of his like fellow stunt people up. And the two of them just went through the whole thing, just demonstrating what the fight scene was going to be. And he's like, okay, now you guys do that.
Oh my god! Oh man!
Funny because clearly Lawrence Fishburne and Keanu Reeves, they needed months to rehearse some of those scenes because they weren't professional martial artists. They wanted to make it look good enough for it to be what it ultimately ended up being. You know, and it's a wonderful film.
But Trish, you know what I'm thinking of right now, hearing this story?
What?
You know what's going through my head? Remember the Birdcage? Remember in the Birdcage, the scene with Robin Williams teaching the guy how he's going to dance?
Uh-huh.
It's like, I'm picturing that, you know? It's like the martial arts equivalent of Fussy, 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 Madonna, Madonna, Twyla, Twyla. Do all that on the inside. Like, I'm picturing him. It's like, let's do a little Bruce Lee, a little Jet Li, a little Jackie. Do all that. Now just do it. I mean, I just got a picture of that. You know, I just that just went through my head, and I'm just like, oh my god. Oh jeez. I think the other. Oh man. I think the other one that I hear the behind the scenes stuff for it. It's like, I haven't watched this next film. I have not watched it in its entirety in years. Like, I think, I can't remember who President last time I watched. I think I've only watched, in fact, actually, now that I think about it, I think the last time I watched it in its entirety was when I saw it in the theater. And I have, like, the rest of the time, if I may be caught, like, tiny little chunks of it on TV, but I have never sat down and actually watched it again from beginning to end. And you know, this one would be I gotta bring it up, Batman and Robin. I mean, that I
have yet to make it all the way through that movie.
Yeah, the thing. Well, first of all,
I have it on Blu-ray, by the way.
And you have not made it all the way through.
It was hard. I tried to watch it. I was going to record with Sean a couple years ago, and I got like 15 minutes in, and I'm like, I can't.
Who broke?
I don't have it in me right now. No,
did you and
we
Hunting
it
watch
separately.
It together? Oh, okay.
No,
see, you know what? Maybe that was the problem.
Already,
maybe that was the problem.
Yeah, I think
you
if we've been in the
be
same room
together.
To support one another, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, at worst, you could see, because like Trish and I have seen some, you know, Trish and I, we did the long distance thing, so we used to do Skype movie nights, you know, so we could prop each other up, you know, if not, you know, if either when we're watching films together, like actually in the same room, or we're on Skype, at least we could be like, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay, it's almost done, it's almost done. I mean, you know, hell, Trish, you did that. You did that for me with Birdemic. Although it had, I would have to say you were kind of.
I mean, like, I think you asked Joel Schumacher, he wouldn't think that Batman and Robin was a bad movie. He would think that he was making a tribute to the 1960s Adam West version of Batman. I think that was what he was shooting for.
I've heard that too. Trish, help. Because I'm brain hurt here.
I'm not trying to justify it. I mean, there are plenty
yeah,
of.
I guess what I
have to say is, like, as bad as Batman and Robin was, and it is practically unwatchable, just because it's so painful. You know, the thing with the ice skates in the beginning. You know, I mean, never mind. Everybody likes to bring up the nipples on the bat suit, but I think that movie has much deeper problems than that.
Yeah,
I saw an article recently online where it was someone who was like, everybody goes off on Batman and Robin, but why doesn't anybody talk about how terrible Batman Forever is? And and like he said, like, you know, I myself saw this in the theater and came away from it saying, oh, it wasn't that bad. No, it really was that bad, and the writing was on the wall with that film before, you know, Batman Forever drove a stake into the heart of comic book movies for, you know, the ensuing several years.
Yeah, no, and it's, well, see, I, you know, Trish and I were talking yesterday, you know, so we're talking about this episode tonight, and, like, I'm thinking to myself, you know, one of the things I bring up is, okay, well, you know, I last night I brought up Poison Ivy, and Poison Ivy is one, like, the, you know, the sexiest villains, like, if not in just Batman's rogues gallery in comics, period. You know, this is something that should have been a fucking gimme. This should have just been like, wow, this is going to be easy. This is going to be freaking easy. You know, this is going to be so easy. And it got fucked up. You know, it's like, yeah, he fucked up Poison Ivy. You know, another
people
one.
I find it especially galling because the Poison Ivy in Batman the Animated Series is such a great encapsulation of the character.
Thank you. Yes. Yes. Thank you. Yeah. You know, forget Poison Ivy. Forget the fact that one of the things that makes me bang my head against the wall is the fact that you've heard about who we were supposed to get before Schwarzenegger ended up nailing the role, like getting the role. You heard about who was rumored for it, right?
No, I don't think I've heard that one.
Trish, I told you last night, who did I tell you was supposed to be rumored to be Mr. Freeze before ended up being Schwarzenegger?
Oh, Patrick Stewart.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I mean, it's...
Well, I like Patrick Stewart a lot as an actor and as a person, but I have seen stuff where he kind of phoned it in.
Yeah, but that's where I bang my head against the wall, and it's like, I don't know how to feel. Because on the one hand, I kind of feel like he may have been better at kind of projecting, you know, what's needed for a character like Mr. Freeze. But on the other hand, given what we got, it's like, should he, you know, should Patrick Stewart himself and all of us here, should we basically be saying, okay, well maybe that was a bullet dodge. You know, Arnold took one for the team. Okay, Arnold took the hit for that one. Yeah, he took the hit for that one. Although and it's one of these things where I'm not mad at the actors. Like, I know George Clooney has fallen on his sword over this movie, and I'm like, I'm not mad. George, I don't blame you. I don't blame you, okay? This is not your fault. You know, like, I don't blame him for what happened. Just like, I don't blame this actor, but Bane in that movie, it's like, it's like now I'm the one twitching and like about to lose it, because it's like I remember reading that comic Nightfall, and I was like, wow, this is actually kind of a cool villain. Because it's like, yeah, he's a fucking tank, but he's got a brain. And he's not just, well, I'm going to go kick Batman's ass now. He's like, no. I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to mind fuck him first, and I'm going to wait until he's, like, exhausted, dead on his feet, ready to, you know, ready to just drop. And then I'm going to go physically beat the shit out of him. And so when then we have Bane in this movie, and I'm like, where did you get this shit? Where? Why? Why did you think this was a good idea? Like, honestly, Trish, can you do me a favor right now? Just right
what?
Now, can you do me a favor? I need you to do me a favor, okay? I need you to make a note of this, all right? I need you to make a note of this. This will probably never happen. This will probably never happen, but I want you to keep this in mind, okay? If there is ever a situation where the two of us are in the same room as Joel Schumacher, I need you, okay? I need you to get a hold of me, okay? I need you to do, like, everything you can to chill me out so that I don't, like, just approach this guy in a mad fury, like, asking what the fuck was going through your head over shit like this. Like,
you're going to have to hold me back for getting at him for wrecking Phantom of the Opera, so.
Shit. Yeah. Okay. All right. So tell you what, okay? We're going to make this, okay. You know, there's you know how people have, like, you know, the mutual suicide pact? You know how the, you know how people do that? We're going to have,
yeah.
Okay, this is what we're going to have. All right. So, and Paul, you're a witness, and everybody listening to this episode, okay, you're all witnesses, okay? Trish, right now, you and I are going to do, this is not going to be a suicide pact. This is going to be a mutual, okay, this is going to be a mutual hold me back pact, okay? All right, so this is what we're going to do. This is mutual hold me back, okay? And how this is going to work is if we're doing a con, and, you know, Joel Schumacher's, like, a guest, okay? So like, we're passing by him and, like, the guest tables and stuff like that. We're going to make a promise, okay? I make this promise. I need you to make the promise with me, okay? We will hold each other back for our respective beefs, okay? So
okay.
Whoever starts to lose it first, okay, the other person will be, it's okay, shh, he's a fellow guest, he can't get kicked out of the con for this, shh, leave him alone, he's probably getting crap from other people, it's okay, let it go. Okay, so can we do that? Can we do that? Do we make that a thing? Okay, all right, so it's a thing now, we'll, you know, I will help you with Phantom, you help me with Batman and Robin. Okay, so good. We're good now. It'll be fine. We're not going to jump over to, you know, Joel Schumacher and just be like, what is your problem? Ugh! But, oh, jeez. Oh, man. You know what? I think I'm switching movies right now. I think it's time. I was gonna talk about the 98 Godzilla, but I think we need to bring one of your spirit animals into the mix here, because I think we need to put him on trial. I think we need to put this movie on trial, by extension, the main actor in this movie, in absentia. Because I wanted to talk about the 2000s Nick Cage version of The Wicker Man.
Mm-hmm.
Because that one I would put on, like, bad. Like, it was just bad. Trish, you never saw... Wait, did you see the Nicolas Cage version?
I've seen most of it, yeah.
You've seen most of it. Okay, yeah. Because what you haven't... And we watched, like, a snippet of the original, didn't we? Like, I think we caught the last chunk of the original. Because
I
remember
so.
Watching
yeah.
it, and I think you were... Yeah. I just... Yeah. The Wicker Man, I'm just... I...
Well, the original Wicker Man was not exactly Shakespeare. I mean, it was a pulpy exploitation kind of horror film. I don't remember if that was an Amicus one that did that or a Hammer.
No, I don't think it was. It had Christopher Lee, but it wasn't Hammer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think it was
Hammer
Horror.
I like the original Wicker Man a lot. It does have Christopher Lee in it, and I've read the book that it was loosely based off of. This book called Ritual. Ritual was actually pretty entertaining.
Okay.
What? Yeah, that was a pretty decent read for, you know, like a kind of, you know, occult thriller thing going on. But no, I have a lot of time for the original Wicker Man. It's been a long time since I've seen the Nick Cage version, but that's another example of, like, they didn't think they were making a bad movie when they did that. They just let Nicolas Cage off the chain. And I think that's another one of those things where I think a lot of the movie, the problem with it is they didn't have faith in their audience, in the sense that they felt the need to spell out the metaphor to the point where if you're paying attention, you'd probably feel insulted. Like, you know, they have all the bee imagery throughout the movie. They have the honeycomb patterns in the floor and, you know, the whole matriarchal thing that's sort of set up like a bee colony. And then at the end of the movie, after hitting him with the bees, oh, not the bees, they're in my eyes, ah, blah, 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 you know, all of that. They go so far as actually stuff him in the Wicker Man. And again, that scene in the original movie is legit terrifying.
From the way
they do that. But they have to go so far as to have them start chanting, the drone must die. The drone, the bee metaphor. Get it? The bee metaphor?
Bees are matriarchy.
It was like, well, come on, man.
What always got me comparing the two endings is so you have the original and you have Edward and you have basically, you know, here's the Wicker Man burning. You have Ed Woodward, right? He was the original guy.
I think so. Let me just look it up.
Yeah. But you had the original protagonist. He's in the Wicker Man. You have Christopher Lee leading everybody in a chant and Ed Woodward, like basically trying to go shot for shot, screaming gospel, you know, it's really terrifying, especially because Woodward, for better, Woodward, even unintentionally, Deputy Howie is basically like, my God is better than your God. But it's like, okay, but you're still burning to death. You know that, right?
That's what makes the movie interesting, though, is it's got a theme. Yeah. It's got this conflict of, you know, here's this mainstream religion that's big and tough and been in charge for, you know, most of the time. And here's this guy representing it. And he goes to this, this place where people have this completely radically different set of beliefs and they impose their beliefs upon him in the way that, you know, Christianity has been imposed on other indigenous populations throughout history. It's like a kind of a historical comeuppance. It's clearly making parallels there. There's deep meteor stuff that you can get into. And the remake doesn't really have that because all they have is this lukewarm thing about Nicolas Cage's character feeling emasculated.
Yeah. Well, no. And then plus it's like, you know, you compare trying to go shot for shot, you know, it's like there's the chanting and there's, you know, Deputy Howie being like, you know, I trust in the Lord and blah, 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 you know, compared to Nicolas Cage just screaming. And it's like, wow, dude, wow. This is how you're responding to their whole, the drone must die thing. You're screaming like a biatch as you burn to death. Okay. Not to mention the fact that it's like, the other thing is
in the Wicker Man, the ultimate sort of twist is that Deputy Howie, through his own actions, through his refusal to leave, through his perseverance and everything like that, essentially makes himself into the perfect sacrifice for the pagan druidic ritual. Like these people are singing it, it's like a happy occasion for them. Whereas in the remake version, Nicolas Cage is there because a woman betrayed him. Like the whole movie is about how evil women are. And I'm like,
things that likes to be pointed out about that movie is Nicolas Cage in a bear suit punching a woman out.
The supercut of The Wicker Man is a comedy is an excellent YouTube video, no doubt about that.
The other thing for me though, and it's like this is one of those things where I would really love to figure out why the writers of the film did this and why the makers of the film did this is that you have like another version of the film that has, like, you have two endings, one which, you know, Nicolas Cage burns to death, and the last thing you see is, like, the head of the Wicker Man coming off and just, like, falling towards the camera. Then you have, like, another version of the film where you have two of the girls at a bar, and they pick up two new guys, and it cuts to black, and you can kind of hear screaming, indicating, well, they suckered two more guys. And it's like, to me, I kind of feel like that ending, it's like, congratulations, what you're saying is, these women are stupid. Because, you know, because that's one of the things Nicolas Cage, like, at least with the original Wicker Man, you did have one of the final shots that Deputy Howie takes, is he tells Lord Summerisle, Christopher Lee's character, oh, this is not going to work. This is not going to work. You don't know what you're doing. Next year, it's going to be you in here. You know, and of course, we don't see that, so we don't know if it worked or not. You know, it's
wonderful ambiguity to it. And the other one's then, just a horror movie ending.
Well, and see, that's the thing. The ending that has, like, the two guys, basically you're saying these women are stupid because Nick Cage does, like, a similar thing where he goes, this is not going to work, this is not going to stop your apple harvest, you know. So basically it's like, you know, that pile of ash that's Nicolas Cage. Yeah, it turns out he was right. Women are just psycho that love burning guys. And it's like, so, you know, it's, you know, great. You're basically saying all these women are stupid and they just are obsessed with bees and burning guys to death. It's like, okay.
I think it speaks more to the failings of a male director who thinks that he's making an empowerist feminist horror film, when in fact he's unaware of how misogynistic so many elements of the film ultimately end up reading.
Definitely.
But I mean, like, I've noticed that there's definitely an overrepresentation of genre films. When it comes to most people's lists of bad movies, it seems like a lot of them are science fiction, horror, you know, that kind of thing. And perhaps that's because a lot of those passion project films tend to be low budget. You know, Birdemic was made with, like, you know, $10,000 and a ham sandwich.
I think it took a decade or something to make.
Yeah, well, and it's, you know, it's something
shot on weekends.
Sort of, yeah, cobbled together. Yeah, I mean, like, the original Evil Dead movie took, like, what, 3-4 years for them to get to the actual final cut of that film with all the shooting and this and that and the other thing that they had to do. But I think that might be why there seems to be such an overrepresentation of genre films in a lot of people's bad movie lists. That, and I think a lot of the bad movie list stuff kind of grows out of the tradition of Mystery Science Theater 3000 and the idea of riffing.
Yeah.
And they were predominantly genre films. I mean, they had occasional drama in there, but for the most part, it was like science fiction and horror. And
I know they did. I know
that. Frank and all that.
Yeah, I know that the Sci-Fi Channel years, they did get their hands on the Olivier Hamlet, which I didn't see that episode, but there's a part of me that wants to, because I'm like, wow, this is that.
The movie version of the Olivier Hamlet's not super great, in my opinion, but I don't know if it's MST3K worthy.
Yeah, no,
now,
I don't
was
know.
Was it the Olivier Hamlet? Because I thought they did a version of Hamlet that was like the English dubbed version of like a Hungarian production or something like that. Maybe they did more than once. It's been a while.
Yeah, I want to think it's. I could have sworn that the Hamlet that they did was the Olivier. Although it could have, you could be right. I don't know.
Was it in color?
You know, it's. I think the Olivier one is black and white.
Yeah,
I think it was black and white. Like if I remember seeing stills, it was black and white.
Eddie, I might have to let you go. You were breaking up really bad.
If you gotta go. But I gotta say though,
I could barely hear you. You were breaking up, but it seems to have passed.
Yeah, no. But I gotta say, one thing I was debating or not to make a big
Yeah, now it's breaking up again. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I know. My deal is action hero. Like, I don't know what to think of it. I don't know what to think of it as. Bad movie, a so bad it's good. I really don't know. I mean, Trish, what do you think? Because I think you really moved.
Sorry, you're breaking up so badly. I can't understand what you're saying.
Wow.
Oh, so you're having a problem there too, huh?
Yeah, I.
Yeah, it was really choppy. I heard you were talking about the Last Action Hero.
Yeah, Last Action Hero. Like, is it so bad it's good, or is it just plain bad? I don't know.
Okay, now you're better. I don't know. I like that movie. It is got its bad qualities to it, but at the same time, I like the idea of the movie. I mean, who wouldn't want to hop into one of their favorite movies and play around with the characters? I think it's a cool concept. I just think it was executed kind of badly.
That's another movie, though. Like, I remember when I did my episode on Last Action Hero, one of the things I did to prepare for it was read one of the original scripts. And I think it was the Shane Black script that I read. And the original script of that movie is very different from what ultimately ends up being on screen. It was much more of like this sort of really grim, dark comedy that was sort of a condemnation of our enjoyment of these sort of big, ridiculous 80s action films. There's a little bit of that in the final one, but it was like where in the version that I read, like the main character that ends up in this, you know, world of movies ultimately ends up like becoming the villain at the end of the movie by acting like the hero would, you know, just indiscriminately killing the bad guys and stuff like that. You're kind of horrified and disgusted at the end of it when you read the script rather than see the movie that was adapted from it.
Really? Is this available online?
I think you might be able to find that script on simplyscripts.com. I don't know if it's still available because sometimes they rotate their collection.
Huh.
But yeah, if you want to see, like, if you ever really want to see, like, the difference between what a movie could have been and what it ultimately ends up being, I recommend reading at least whatever scripts are available. Sometimes they have earlier drafts and that have gone through major revisions since then, but yeah. But yeah, if you read Last Action Hero, that's going to be, it's very different from what the film ended up being. If you read the Spates script, the George Spates, I think it was, script of what eventually became Prometheus, like all of the stupid plot holes of like scientists being idiots and doing dumb things, like none of that is present in that script. It was all like Lindelof's tampering with it later. Like everything they do has a very reasonable explanation for why they're doing it, and like, you know, like it isn't just like these guys are dumb and they don't deserve to live. But I mean, like, I don't even have enough energy to be mad at Prometheus anymore. They made that other one. Ridley Scott made that. What's the newer one called? Alien Covenant, I think. Some Prometheus Covenant, something like that. I can't hear you.
Well,
you there, Eddie?
Sounds like he's gone.
Yeah, I just can't hear him. It's all broken up.
Yeah, he says that he can't hear anything.
Mm.
Must have dropped him.
Well, the point I was going to make was that new Alien movie that Ridley Scott did, my dad was watching it the other day, and I caught just a couple of minutes of it, and I'm like, is he trying to make a comedy at this point? Because this
that
is
good,
parody.
Huh?
Oh, it was shockingly bad. Just the way it was filmed, the way it was lit, the special effects. I was like, oh,
awful.
You don't even care at this point, do you?
Oh, I remember when I watched Prometheus? Yeah, Prometheus. Mm. It was, I sat there in the theater and I literally timed it to when the first alien showed up, and it was over an hour into the movie. And
well, yeah, but I mean, that pattern worked in the original Alien movie.
It was just felt like there was nothing going on until then.
Mm.
And then when something finally happened, it was like, oh, finally.
Well, I think the other problem is... That
well, of course, it had to...
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I think with that, with that one, Trish, it's like when that little, I always make this joke, when that tentacle monster thingy attacked the builder or whatever it's called. I mean, I'm sorry. I the first thing that popped in my head, I just screamed at the screen. I'm like, hey, I'm not a Japanese schoolgirl. Leave me alone. I mean, I just and then yeah, the actual alien creature. It's I don't know. Oh man, I just yeah.
Well, the original script for Alien Engineers is it's a fairly by the numbers. It's not super original or anything like that, but it would have, if they had just made the script as it was written, it would have been a solid science fiction movie. And then
yeah,
Lindelof came along.
Well,
but like,
yeah, well,
the other thing, the difference between Prometheus
yeah.
and Alien though, is like in Prometheus, the only character that you have any reason to care about or be interested in is David for the first hour of the movie. Whereas in the original Alien, you had all of these working class people. You got Ripley, you got, Yaphet Kotto's character, you've got Harry Dean Stanton being Harry Dean Stanton in space, and they're like normal people working blue collar jobs, you know, and talking about the shares that they're going to get from them from the mining operation and all that kind of stuff, just living lives like normal human beings in space, and you get to know them as people and become interested in them, so you become emotionally invested in their trying to survive against this alien menace and the whole thing about the corporation screwing them over, you know. So it's a very human film in that regard, and we just don't have any of that in Prometheus. We got Guy Pearce, unconvincing old man.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, I mean, why did they have to do that? Oh, man. No, and I just, you know, it's... No, and I think the last one I want to bring up... for me, I mean, I do have to admit this, you know, the movie has its flaws, but I'll still carry a torch for the 87 G.I. Joe animated movie. Cause I mean, it did for all its problems, it did like, it introduced a couple of things that are now like part of, you know, the pop culture of, you know, of the franchise. And it's interesting cause, if you like, I don't know if this is on the Blu-ray, the last Blu-ray release, but I know it's on the 20th anniversary DVD. It has a script. It has like a script, and there's like stuff in there where you could see, how this movie was meant to be like a theatrical thing, and you know, and stuff like for example, they actually have characters dying. You know, they have that opening, you know, that opening sequence where, Pythona breaks into the, you know, Cobra base. Like in the finished film, you know, there's a guy who, you know, there's like a guard on like a sniper's roost that sees her, and she just ambushes him. And then you get the audio coming in at like the security station. In the script, it shows that she actually threw him off the roof. Like that's why he's screaming. You know, he fell to his death.
Yeah.
Not only does Duke die. You know, that was like the big, you know, the big thing was they wanted to kill Duke. And, you know, in the version that we got, they dubbed over a line of he's in a coma. And then at the end had Doc like phoning in going, hey, guys, did we win? Just wanted to let you know Duke's awake. He's
get
okay.
Get me to a hospital quick.
But yeah, in the script, not only do they have his death scene, they have a funeral. So you have a funeral complete with like Flag Drake coffin. So it's like,
yeah, but
it's like the message.
I have to wonder though, with and it's been decades since I've seen the G.I. Joe movie, but how much of those, you know, kind of take no prisoners and crush, you know, children's dreams moments in G.I. Joe the movie and Transformers the movie are them trying to be like, let's make this film a dramatic work of art, and how much of it is like, well, we got to sell the new generation of toys, so let's get rid of the old ones, you know?
Well, okay,
As
far as G.I. Joe was concerned, I believe it was one of those things of, since this was going to be a theatrical thing, that, you know, that they were going to be like, okay, let's punch things up a notch and show war as hell. Like, I know the guy who ended up writing the final story in the script, Buzz Dixon, something that was pointed out, and I actually went back and I looked at all the stories that he did for, like, the cartoon itself, is that while you couldn't kill anybody off, he did try to have characters injured, or, you know, he did try to have, like, scratches and bruises. This was kind of like, okay, if we're going to be in the theater, let's kick things up a notch. I know that Transformers, part of it was, it's like, okay, we're going to be in theaters. We've got an older audience. These are robot characters. But then also it's okay if we kill these guys off. You know, it's okay if we kill these guys off because we have these new toys coming in. So the kids are going to be like, oh, that's okay. I can play with this guy. They underestimated the fact that kids were going to be like, oh, my God, Iron Mike's dead.
Devastated.
You know, they underestimated that kids would freak out and that the parents would freak out because their kids are freaking out. You know, it's funny to watch the behind the scenes stuff that was in the 20th anniversary DVD, and I think they repeated it for the 30th anniversary DVD. It's funny watching the producers basically being like, we didn't know, we had no idea. Basically being totally apologetic because they had no clue at what they were doing. They did not know that kids were going to just be so traumatized.
But when you talk about bad movies in general, though, I don't think the G.I. Joe movie is at the top of most people's lists. I think a lot of people remember that very fondly, despite its, like, numerous script revisions and animation mistakes and stuff like that. I think that's one of those things that gets the rosy-colored glasses of nostalgia when most people think about it, you know? I mean, our generation that grew up with
I am friends with, like, a lot of I do run with, like, a lot of the Joe groups on Facebook, and yeah, it's one of those things where, like, it's actually cherry picked because there's some stuff about the movie that people like, and there's others that they wish they could go back in time and, like, either cut out completely or, like, seriously changed, like the whole deal behind Cobra Law. So it's like, but I think it's like, it's universal. It's kind of a universal thing where we could all agree and say that opening with the Statue of Liberty, it's like, boom, you know, right there, you know, the coolest thing ever. Like, it's like, if you could only salvage one thing about that movie, if it was the Battle at the Statue of Liberty, then everybody would be like, that, please. Like, that would get an overwhelming vote. You know what? Okay, so right about now, okay, what I want to do, actually, is we're going to do something. You know what? We've been talking about bad movies this entire time. You know, we've been talking this over. And you know what? Let's go on to some happy stuff, okay? I'm going to be a gracious host. You took the time to come in, Paul. I'm going to give you a moment right now to plug your stuff. Okay? So, you know what?
I'm putting my promotion.
That's okay. You know what? Try your best, dude. Try your best. If anything, I will jump in and, you know, just butter things up because, I mean, you took the time to come in. You deserve to self-promote.
Okay. Well, yeah, my name is Paul Chapman. I'm the host of the Greatest Movie Ever podcast, GMEpodcast.com. Been doing it since 2006. Used to be a weekly podcast. Can't keep up that schedule now. Now it's more monthly and intermittent, basically, when I have a chance to get around to working on it. I also write for Otaku USA Magazine, anime and live-action film reviews for that, and I'm a news writer for Crunchyroll News. That's what I do.
Okay, and where can they... You're on Facebook, But I know, and you're also on Twitter. Where can they find you if they want to track you down on Twitter?
On Twitter at Gooberzilla dot, well, just at Gooberzilla, GOOBERZILLA.
Yeah, it's just like on Twitter. @WHTBLLNKING. It's supposed to be White Balloon King, but you know, Twitter had that character limit, and I'm just like, fine, I'll remove some vowels. Sheesh. Yeah, it's like yeah, they've allowed you to do bigger, you know, they've allowed for more space to put tweets, but it's like, still can't edit. And see, for somebody who's OCD like I am about, you know, doing the perfect tweet, it's maddening. You're like, Trish, tell them how many times I've like deleted stuff and like redone it because I made a boo-boo.
A lot.
Yeah. So it's like every time, and sometimes it takes me a while to put a tweet because I'm like, delete, 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 delete. You know, I think I have to like, I have to hit, you know, the delete, you know, when you hit the delete button, it's like, save draft. You know, I have to like save the draft because I'm trying to get somebody's handle, and for some reason it's not giving it to me. And I'm like, okay, let me do the search function, see if I have it right. It's like, why do you frustrate me, social media? But as far as our show is concerned, yeah, I will say this, you know, to all the people watching, we are going to be taking a break next week, you know, Memorial Day, you know, it's going to be Memorial Day weekend, and you know what, we're going to take a little break. We need to decompress. You know, we've been talking bad movies. We've been talking blockbuster movies. We all need to, like, you know, just deep breath and, you know, just kind of relax, spend time with the family. So we'll be taking a little break, but we will be back in 2 weeks. And you know what? Iggy is going to be in charge. This is going to be her thing. She is going to be, she's actually going to be talking some stuff. She's been to a few cons, and I think she's actually going to have some vendors on to talk about their stuff. So that should be interesting. You know, while she's doing it, though, I will say, everybody behave. Okay, she is handling the switchboard. She is handling the hosting duties. I know she can be a handful, but everybody be. It's like Roadhouse. Be nice. Everybody be nice until it's time not to be nice, and you won't know when it's time. I will tell you. Yeah, I don't sound as badass as Patrick Swayze, do I? You guys can be honest. I know I don't have the Dalton growl. It's okay. I accept it. We can't all be Dalton, can we, Paul?
No.
I mean,
stuffed polar bear.
Yeah. Can't be the stuffed polar bear that fell on. Oh God, what was that guy's name? What was the name of that
it's been a long time since I've seen Roadhouse.
Tiny? Was it Tiny? I want to say Tiny. Mm-hmm. Oh, geez. And actually, I do have, and you know, as far as this episode is concerned, there is one regret that I have, and I just realized it coming in, you know, when I sat down at the desk and I was getting like, you know, the switchboard ready. I found at Walmart, like in the discount bin, I found the Blu-ray of Your Hunter from the Future. It was the discount bin, and it was like $5, and I was like, why not? I could have watched it for this episode. I could have watched Gymkata for this episode. I have it on DVD.
Again, though,
I've been meaning to subject my friends and family
this
to it.
This is about bad movies.
Okay. See, Trish, if you ever want to complain to somebody about why you shouldn't see Gymkata, yeah, Paul's not going to help you. Sorry. You know, I love you, Trish. Right? You know, I love you.
Skill of gymnastics.
You're going to see Gymkata.
Skill of karate.
Exactly. Well, there's the stone pommel horse.
Mm-hmm.
Stone pommel horse. Yep. Can't forget the stone pommel horse. And what was it? Was it called the City of the Dead, or like it was called something like the City of the Dead or the City of Madness?
I think it was the City of Mad Men, yeah.
Mad Men, yeah, it was something like that.
Not to be confused with the TV show.
Yeah, no, and then there's, and then, of course, you know what, something that I can't find, otherwise I would have subjected people to this, and it would have been the hallmark of this episode. Remember when Julian made us watch Hearts in Armor?
Yeah. That was a movie,
that,
all right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
but even that, though,
many...
like, as strange as that is, because it's so strange, I wouldn't say it's necessarily a bad, bad movie.
Well, I just want to know, how many times did Tanya Roberts almost get raped in that movie?
I think you would have an easier time trying to categorize how many times she did not almost get raped in that movie.
Yeah. Well, not to mention the fact that it's like you have the other lead female and this other guy, like, doing this whole doomed romance thing and finding a Glenn to, like, make love, and they cut between that and that dwarf character. Remember that there was, like, this weird magic dwarf in the movie? But it's like these two people making love, these two tragic lovers making love. Here's the dwarf! The people making love. There's the dwarf! The people making love. The dwarf is leering at the camera! It's like,
yeah,
dude,
that's very, very weird.
What the hell's wrong with you? Why did you do it? Like, again, why did the director do that? Why? God, what is wrong with you? Do you want the audience to never be able to have sex again? Because they will equate sex with this dwarf, magic dwarf character staring at the camera. Like, is that what you want? Is that what you're trying to go for here? Like, be honest. Oh, God. See, I haven't even watched that movie since the three of us watched it, and that's burned in my brain. Like, I can't get it out. I can't get it out. Oh, geez, Trish, when we're done here, you need to help me, because that's in my brain. I want it out. Trish, help me get it out. Can you help me get it out? I don't want it anymore. Oh, God. Trish?
What?
Oh, dear. I was saying, can you help get that image out of my head?
Maybe later.
Maybe later. Okay. All right. Good. That's good. Yeah. Later, definitely. Please. Because I'm just, right now, I'm just, oh, God. It hurts. It truly hurts. Oh, man. And yeah. Oh, and yeah, I do notice that. Yeah, someone may point out, why didn't you mention, you guys rag on the DCEU films, why didn't you mention any? Because, you know what, I thought about it, but I thought, you know what, let's give them a break right now, because I want to focus on other films.
It's too easy.
I want to focus on other
talking
movies
about,
today.
Yeah, when you're talking about bad movies that are just big Hollywood films that are not critically or financially successful, that's not really what I think of when I think of bad movies.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Even,
although,
like,
and again, that's
bad movies.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Definitely. But yeah. We'll probably.
I saw Justice League the other day.
Oh God. Yeah. We were watching it.
That was the family friendly comedy of the year. I have not laughed that hard at a film in a long time.
Awesome. Yeah, but I will say, it's funny you should mention Justice League, because, yeah, I will say that one of the episodes we're going to have coming up in the near future, in the next couple of months, we will be doing some villain comparisons. We will be comparing Marvel versus DC EU villains. So that should be fun. And hell, you know what, I just, in the minute or so that we have left, Paul, thank you again for coming on. And yeah, you do have a standing invitation to come back. You've been a great guest, especially when we do some movie stuff. Oh, thank you. But yeah, to everybody else, this has been Eduardo M. Fryer, host of Keeping It Reals, and your ghost host for this journey through cinematic terror of bad cheese. And with me has been the ever lovely
Trisha Fryer.
Trish, I think there you go. That's your cue. Yeah, and we just got to say, anybody who's traumatized because we brought up bad movie memories today, We do apologize. Of course, bad movies was in the description, so you know what, you were forewarned. But I don't know what Iggy's going to do in a couple of weeks, but I will promise that for our next one, I'll try to do something happier. Okay? Promise. Honest Injun. And yeah, we're out. We're not broadcasting anymore. That was, yeah. Oh, geez. That was good. I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I vanished for a couple of seconds.
I guess something happened.
Cause we were talking about how I was breaking up and then suddenly I stopped hearing anything and they said, you know, that there was a problem. So I basically just called on my cell. Like I used the host call in. So yeah, I don't know. It's weird. Apparently the Blog Talk has been merging with like another company and they've been, I don't know, there's been snafus. It was supposed to be fixed, so I don't know. Like, I'm seriously considering maybe using the host call-in, like, the next episode, see what happens. And just, you know, I'll just have my headphones plugged in so we don't get feedback or anything. I don't know.
Okay, it's getting a little late, so I'm going to have to let you go, okay?
Yeah. Thank you for coming on, and I know it's later for you, but you know that standing invite is for real, dude. I mean, anytime, and okay. if you need me to co-host on GME, I mean, I'm still doing through Skype, but you know, I've got some headphones and stuff, so you know, we'll figure something out.
Okay. Yeah, we'll take it easy, Eddie. Okay.
Yeah. You too, man. You too, and keep in touch, dude.
Okay. See you around. Bye-bye.
All right. Yep, and Trish, I'll be down there in like a minute. Let me just shut down on everything here, and let me turn the air off, because now I'm getting cold.
All right, bye.
All right, see you downstairs.